The Worth Report, featuring Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright. We'll take a look at the past, present, and future of the financial landscape and discuss how it affects you, your family, and the world around you. This is The Worth Report. Now, here are your hosts, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
Good Saturday. Welcome to The Worth Report. I'm your host, Nick Wharton, along with Glenn Wright, founder and president of Worth Financial. Each week, we'll bring you news that you can immediately use to manage your financial planning and offer commentary on local, national, and global events that affect your ability to sustain your financial future. Glenn, my friend, here we are again, another Saturday morning. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic, Nick. How about yourself?
Man, I'm wonderful, man. It's just been a great week. We've got great weather. What else could we ask for?
Man, have you been watching these NBA contracts, seeing what's coming out? I mean, the money that's coming out now, it's unreal.
It takes your breath away. I am still reeling, actually, from that Durant trade. How do you go? I'm just aside right now. How do you go from being down to a team 3-1,
3-1,
beating Golden State, and then the next week you play with them?
You know, Paul Pierce tweeted it out. He said, if you can't beat them, join them. That's exactly what he did.
This must be new millennial thinking. I don't get it. I don't get it.
But speaking of, I think our guest played a little basketball, too. So I'm excited to bring him on the show as well.
Absolutely. We have Brian Payne, principal broker of Payne Commercial Real Estate. He's a seasoned real estate professional specializing in retail sector with tenant representation, brokerage, investment sales. Brian is involved in daily aspects of the company. Interestingly enough, though, Brian began his career in commercial real estate in 2002. He moved to Tulsa to join his father in the business after graduating from Campbell University, North Carolina. While attending Campbell University, Brian enjoyed a successful career as an NCAA Division I basketball player, and he's been doing this real estate thing since 2002. So, Brian, tell us more about yourself. What did I leave out?
You pretty much touched on about every aspect of my professional career in real estate. I greatly appreciate the kind introduction. I do, however, need to back up a second because you absolutely hit a sore spot with the KD trade.
Oklahoma, right? Yeah.
Oh, yes.
It was unbelievable. I could not agree with you guys more on how anyone that has any competitive bone in their body jumps ship and goes to the team that beat them in a game six.
Unheard of.
I'm at a loss for words.
Could you imagine Michael Jordan going to play for the Detroit Pistons?
Well, the Knicks.
Isn't that something?
Jordan wouldn't do it. Yeah. Kobe wouldn't do it. Didn't do it. Tim Duncan didn't do it. Allen Iverson didn't do it.
I can only.
The list goes on and on and on.
Well, I can
and
barely
it is just
stand.
Absolutely astonishing.
I can barely stand Patrick working for Michael Jordan. That's deep enough.
Yeah. I do wish KD well. Hope he has a great career. Just, you know, don't want to be a hater, but I hope he doesn't get a ring.
What a great segue.
But thank you for the kind introduction. I greatly appreciate it. You touched on pretty much exactly who I am and what our company is about. We are a boutique commercial real estate firm based in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We cover the entire U.S. and tenant representation work. However, investment-wise, we will look across the U.S. There are certain regions of the country we prefer to stay out of, but we really try to nail down most of our investments within call it a 5-6 hour drive time from where we're located in case we need to have an emergency, a pipe bus, and we need to get our property management team down there and get problems solved, though we try to stay relatively close. So that's about what that is what we do. 80% of our business is retail brokerage work. So we do site acquisitions for national clients, regional clients, and sometimes local clients. We also have a property management company. We launched that about 4 years ago, I believe, and we've got just over 1 million square feet under management at this point in time and trying to grow that very strategically, taking on the right clients and the right assets. And we also have an investment arm called Lead Capital, where we will often syndicate real estate deals out to, you know, Main Street investors, if you will, to get them into the commercial real estate world in a solid asset that we see. Oftentimes, we look for value-add opportunities. We'll also look for a stabilized asset if it's well-positioned in the marketplace. well-tenanted and phenomenal underlying real estate, we will roll the dice on something like that, which roll the dice may not be the proper term. It's not really that much of a roll of a dice when you have all the fundamentals in place. And that's really the philosophy of our company is we're just a fundamental commercial real estate company. We're small and nimble, but we believe in the fundamentals and in the real estate business, as most people do, and as Mr. Wright does in the financial industry. Mm-hmm. The fundamentals are there in athletics and in business, and that's what we go by and we live by, and that's how we operate here.
Well, excellent. You mentioned the fundamentals. You know, we're still in this sort of protracted recession, and everyone's talking about the fundamentals of the economy. How's your business doing in this climate of uncertainty?
You know, being based in Oklahoma, we globally had a little bit of a rough year. Oil getting crushed is not a great thing for the state of Oklahoma. That's our predominant industry here. Energy sector is really the lifeblood of our state. So that being said, even though oil took a significant hit, we didn't see and still have not seen a big dip in activity in real estate, new retailers coming to the market, and it's been surprising in some aspects to not see a little bit of a pause. Now, there has been somewhat of a pause from some of the retailers due to it being an election year, which is, as you stated, I started in 2002, and I've 5 years later, the Great Recession hits. We get to 2009, and then here we are, 7 years after the recession and going through a real estate cycle of that magnitude and seeing it from the angles that we were able to see it from and not get hurt substantially on there. Everyone took a little bit of a shot to the gut during that recession. Some predominant, incredibly gifted and talented developers went down. And I was just astonished to see some of those things transpire during that time. But as we sit today, we're still stable here. Cap rates are pretty compressed right now across the country. I think a lot of that has been predominantly due to the 1031 exchange activities that have taken place as these cap rates started to compress and kept going down and down. All of a sudden it gets to a certain point if you're holding a...
Say more about that, because our listening audience oftentimes are not well steeped in the language of this business. So
capitalization rates, the best way to describe that is if you have a shopping center and let's say it's throwing off, but simple numbers, it's throwing off $100,000 in net operating income, okay? If you take that to market at a 10 cap, the price on that would be $1 million.
I see.
So that's kind of a simplistic way to explain kind of what a cap rate is, and it ebbs and flows with the market. Very heavily tied to interest rates. Interest rates being down for so long has really compressed the cap rates further than a lot of people anticipated. And so I kind of get the sense that maybe that's starting to come to an end. All the 1031 money has, they sold off assets at an extremely low cap rate. So, for instance, if I'm a merchant developer and I've got an assignment with Dollar General, okay, they go out to rural markets and build dollar store concepts. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, if you will, it's the corner store, or if you're in New York, it's the bodega of rural Tennessee.
Sure. That's and where here in Charlotte goes as well.
Or, I'm sorry?
Is here in Charlotte as well.
Correct. Yep. Nationwide. Mm-hmm. They have, I haven't looked recently, they're probably in the neighborhood of 12,000 stores. And so a merchant developer gets an assignment. Dollar General calls Mr. Developer, we'd like to develop, 15 stores next year in the state of Oklahoma. Mr. Developer goes out, ties up the land, builds the building, and in return, Dollar General gives them a lease. Now, their lease is based off, call it, in today's market, they're probably, I would suspect, maybe they're doing lease deals in the 7-cap range or maybe 8-cap range, and the market is, buying Dollar Generals at a 6-cap. So there's a 200 basis point spread that the developer makes on the sale of that.
Got it.
If that helps explain.
Yeah, it's very helpful.
No, it does. Okay. So you brought up the term 1031 exchange. Correct. Brian, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about how that works and the benefits of a 1031 and maybe what's going on with the market because of this 1031 exchange?
Absolutely. So in a 1031 exchange, what actually happens is when you sell an asset, call it a, you got a multi-tenant shopping center and you sell it for $10 million and you got a $3 million net gain. Okay, you have 45 days to identify. You can leave the money in escrow or a third party entity, be that a closing company, title company, certain CPA houses, I think, that assist in that transaction as well.
Okay.
You don't receive any of the profits. You have 45 days to identify up to three properties of like kind. And that's kind of a little bit of a loose term. So if I sell a shopping center, the idea that I need to replace my capital gains, 1031, exchange it into another shopping center. I don't take the proceeds. Once I go into the tax-deferred exchange, so you pay no capital gains taxes and you roll into the next property.
So what you're saying is you can't buy that, you can't use that money and pay it off with your house or so, your primary residence. You can't use that for a 1031 exchange.
That is correct. The way I understand it, there could be some additional loopholes somewhere in the law. I would highly recommend speaking with a very qualified 1031 exchange counsel that really have a strong understanding of the law. There's couple of national companies that assist people all over the United States in that and are very, very good at it, understanding the laws and the maneuvers and what you can and cannot do. But essentially, that's the idea of it. And so what that has done is you now, in lieu of paying tax, because of the liability and the, whatever their tax rate is, they choose to, maybe they overpay a little bit for a safe property, but that still beats the alternative of paying the tax. And that's what I feel has compressed these cap rates down over the last few years, even further.
Okay.
And so now, since all of these 1031s are finally, flushing out and cycling, and cap rates are probably close to being bottomed out. I would, not an economist, but just there can only be so many sales and 1031s, which they happen every day across the country, and it's standard practice in our industry. Majority of folks do it. It always depends on folks, ideology and their risk management. What are they willing to risk to save the taxes?
Okay, so it sounds like, Brian, that there are a lot of tax benefits in buying commercial real estate in general. One being this 1031 exchange, where they could just move their money over and really defer the tax and put that into another property.
Correct.
But aren't there some other benefits of buying commercial real estate?
Depreciation. I wouldn't be the expert on the depreciation language, but that's a
right.
Plays into a big factor in a lot of high net worth individuals that invest into commercial real estate with us, and a lot of them are looking for the depreciation on their tax returns.
And I know you mentioned that you're a boutique firm, but you still work with quite a few Fortune 500 companies as well.
We do. Our largest client would be Simon Properties, who's the largest shopping center developer, owner, property manager in the world. And
wow.
First-class organization, top to bottom, couldn't ask for a better client. They're decisive, they move swiftly, and they have educated us a lot in the few years that we have had an opportunity to work with them. How we leverage ourselves across the United States in doing this, we're involved in a broker network called the Retail Broker Network, RBN for short. It's made up of about 600 companies or 600 brokers actually throughout the United States. So we're covered coast to coast. So if we come into, let's call it Los Angeles, we're looking for some stuff in Los Angeles right now for a client, and we've got three guys locally on the ground that can help us with some of the local things that normally it's hard to come in 3 days and uncover all the stones. And so that's how we leverage ourselves throughout the United States, by being part of that and having the ability to compete with the C.B. Richard Ellis's of the world. And so it's the majority of groups in our organization are very similar to our group, being a small boutique firm, and just in there getting deals done.
So talk with us a little bit about how you found yourself in this business. You're obviously incredibly expert in what you do and very successful. How did you really acquire the taste to be in this business? I know you came in with your dad, but take us to the next level.
I think it's a great lead into that. You know, I would say osmosis would be the best way to describe it. So I'm a kid that's grown up in real estate my entire life. You know, when I was very young, elementary years, you know, my father and mother ran a residential real estate company. And so I spent after school when most kids go to the park and play ball. Not me. I'm in the real estate office talking to the agents and brokers and acting, sitting at a desk and acting like I know what I'm doing with paperwork. And,
wow.
But just picking up the lingo over, you know, 40 years is you don't realize how much you just learned by listening to conversations and being around it. And I spent evenings and weekends at open houses, and so walking through houses with my parents and looking at property and listening and watching how things have been negotiated, and had no idea I was going to get into real estate. Went out to Campbell University on a basketball scholarship and finished up there with a sports management degree. Thought I really wanted to become a sports agent, and looked a little bit further into that and decided, you know, I don't know if that's exactly what I want to do. I don't know what I want to do. So since I don't know what I want to do, where can I go and figure it out? So pulled up a big global atlas and saw, you know what? This looks really nice. This place is called Hawaii. It's still in the United States. It's an island. Let's go check out island life. So moved home for the summer and worked in a restaurant and lived with my parents, sold my car, packed two bags, and bought a one-way ticket to Maui. I was out there for a couple of years. About 8 months after I'm out there, I meet a gentleman at the gym playing basketball, and we start talking, and, you know, what do you do out here? He says, well, I'm in commercial real estate development. I said, really? And he said, yeah. I said, well, you know, I grew up in residential real estate. Love to hear about what you're doing. He invites me to his office and starts laying out plans and showing me, and, he, you know, he's buying properties for $3 million and flipping them for $6 million, you know, 3 years later. And I'm like, you know, that sounds like a pretty creative thing to do. Maybe
wow.
You know, and then anyone that says they wouldn't like to make a substantial amount of money, I don't know if they're being honest, but it's not all about the money, but it was exciting to me at that time in my life. And so made a brief move to Los Angeles, and in the meantime, I was talking to my father. My nephews were growing up, and I'd been away from home for 7 years, and, you know, I'd see them at Christmas, at Thanksgiving, and, you know, maybe once in the summer if I really got lucky, and thought, you know, I'm going to miss their life. My dad said, why don't you, you know, come give this a shot to see what you think. Of course, I come out to Oklahoma. I didn't want to move back to Tulsa. And I thought, you know, I'll give this a shot for, I'll try it for a year. I'll try anything for a year. So I go out there, and within 3 months, I just absolutely fell in love. It just came, I just picked it up. It was like all these years of being around it, it just, all of it made sense. And I could see the opportunity and the creativity that's involved, which is probably one of my favorite things about this business. It's constantly evolving. I mean, the market evolves, it shifts, it moves, it's, you know, there's new approaches, there's no ceiling how high you can go, and there's no floor to how far you can fall. and you eat what you kill. And so it's just, that's always been exciting. And it's, you know, you get up and grind every day. And, you know, us using fundamentals on all of our deals and really putting our clients' needs first. You know, if we take care of our clients first and put what's best for them first, we will be taken care of. I have no question about it. And so that's in a nutshell why and how I got into it, and just the limitless of what you can create, and what, take a raw piece of land and turn it into a shopping destination that people are excited to be at. And, you know, luckily to be involved in changing some of the shopping patterns in our market here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And it's been a blessing, it's been exciting, and it's been a heck of a lot of fun to drive down the road, and my kids are excited, and, hey, Dad, did you do that deal? And, you know, oh, yeah, or, you know, our team did it. And we're very team-oriented. And, you know, it's always we, not us or I. It's we.
So, question, Brian, it's always great to have an expert on here to talk about certain areas in finance, and commercial real estate is so important. I want to talk a little bit more about your investment arm, Lead Capital, and because so many people, our listeners, people call in, tweet, and ask us, when is a good time to invest in commercial real estate? How do we invest in commercial real estate? Talk to me about what type of person typically invests in commercial real estate, and then what makes Lead Capital so different?
Well, we originally started Lead Capital. This is interesting. We started Lead Capital. We were out in our big meeting out in Las Vegas. We go to an annual conference out there. It's now called the Recon. It's a International Council of Shopping Centers puts it on. It's a global convention, you know, probably upwards of 50,000, 30, some years 35, some years, you know, at the height, it was probably 55 or 60,000 people in Las Vegas, the convention center. And it's exciting. You know, you see deals in New York and LA, everything that's going on throughout the United States. You know, Wall Street's there, the bank investment bankers are there, you know, the tenants are there. Anybody that's anybody in our industry, they're there.
So basically, all the private planes are coming to Vegas.
I've heard this from one of the drivers that picks us up when we come out, when we go out to our conference every year. Great guy, picks up every year. He told me one day, he said that is every year during this convention is the largest amount of private planes that they have all year long. It just tells you the amount of wealth and. The deals that are getting done out there are literally, I mean, you're talking about billions of dollars in transactions in 3 or 4 days out there that are moving and shaking. Exciting to be there. So we're at a meeting, and I kind of overhear these guys talking, and these guys are, well, yeah, so-and-so, it was an NBA player was in us. And, you know, long story short, the guys took advantage of him. And me being an ex-athlete, that struck a chord with me. That's, you know, guys that play in the league, NFL, MLB, hockey, whatever you do, that's what they do. That's their job. They're pro athletes. They don't have time to study the market, what's going on. And for some guy that comes in there and presents himself as a great guy to show a guy, sell these guys on this opportunity and then take advantage of them just because he could and then brag about it. It was like, that can't happen. I was like, we can do something about this. Because we relate to the players. We're ex-players. Everyone in my office is an ex-college athlete. And so it was the basis behind it. And one of my partners, Matt Martis, who I'm sure you guys will meet at some point in time, but he was an ex-college basketball coach for a number of years. And we saw an opportunity to help some coaches through his contacts. And he just said, you know, let's do it, and let's do this the right way. And Glenn, you asked about, you know, what type of investor are in our deals. Well, it ranges from anyone. And so depending on what deal we do, one of the first deals that we did, our intention was to keep this at a low investment opportunity where Main Street guys have a chance to get in. Let's create a Wall Street type of product that's a solid fundamental deal that these guys normally don't have access to. And let's get them in it.
So
Let's make it. Before I
got to stop you on this one, Brian, let me ask you a question. When you say Wall Street type of deal, what makes that deal different versus some of these fly-by-night deals? We hear about all these athletes and so many people losing money. What makes these deals different? Why is this a good investment grade considered deal?
So you just nailed it. Investment grade. That's the fundamental. When I speak on fundamental, that's part of the fundamental criteria that we look for in any asset. You know, I'm of the belief that pro athletes have no business early on in their real estate investing career getting involved in a ground up opportunity. What I say when I mean that is, Antoine Walker was a great example. There was guys that got a hold of him and sold him on this multifamily development in Chicago, and you know, he put a ton of money in it and signed on the debt, and bad timing. Maybe it was going to be a good deal, but why should Antoine Walker take that kind of risk? You know, he's making a $100 million earner. He should be in wealth preservation. You know, it's managing his risk. And for anyone to put those guys in such an aggressive deal, unless they so choose and want to do that, and maybe he did, I don't know the backstory on it, but it frustrates me to see those guys take that kind of risk, especially early on. You know, and what we look for, investment grade, we look for Walgreens credit, CVS credit, you know, Dollar Tree, any of these big, strong, publicly traded companies that, you know, honestly, a lot of things we look for are tenants that do better in bad times than they do in good times. And that's your dollar stores, Walmart. It sounds kind of boring, kind of vanilla. Maybe it kind of is, but you know what? It's fundamental, and it makes a lot of sense. And, these, you know, one thing we know going into these deals, yeah, it's going to be a risk, but these guys are not going to lose.
So
they may not make a huge return, but they're not going to make a negative return.
So talk about some of the companies that you're thinking about when you say investment grade. What would be some investment grade companies?
Sure, we love Quick Trip. They're a Tulsa-based company. We understand them very well. I think they've recently come into the North Carolina market pretty hot and heavy. They're a convenience store chain. I think they're somewhere around 400, 500 locations now. They're privately held, but they're they're a very, very strong company, and we look for, so they buy great real estate. They'll sign, you know, 15, 20-year lease. And so you're hedged against the credit worthiness of this company. So Quick Trip or call it Walgreens, okay? So Walgreens is on about every corner. Walgreens or CVS or Rite Aid is probably the third guy in now. They're on about every corner, great corner, in any market throughout the United States, okay? And so the hedge against those guys, in my opinion, was, you know, let's call it a doomsday scenario. If the market crashes as it did in 07, 09, Walgreens is still going to make it. They're not a, you know, a chain with 5-10 locations that's, you know, restaurant-oriented where they highly depend on disposable income and, you know, families going out to eat Monday through Thursday, and that's the core of their business. They're not going to make it. You know, they're going to be the first one to fall when folks start tightening the belt and holding on to that wallet a little tighter. And so we look for kind of recession-proof tenants a lot of times. And we want at least one or two of those guys in an asset so we can build around that, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. When I think about the age demographic of this country, and I see the strategic location of so many pharmaceutical stores and so forth, they're not going anywhere.
No.
They're growing.
They're growing at a rapid pace. And, you know, I think Walgreens, I just saw this the other day, Walgreens missed their earnings a little bit. So, yeah, okay, they missed their earnings. But mm-hmm. You know, baby boomers are still I believe that's correct, they're still the largest population in the U.S.
That's
and
correct.
they're hitting the golden years now, and they're going to, more and more of them will probably be more and more dependent on pharmaceuticals.
Right.
And when you see what, and so when we're analyzing these things, and you walk into a Walgreens, you know, if it's 11:30 on Christmas Eve, you can walk into a Walgreens and buy a DVR.
Yeah,
you can. You can buy just about anything you might need short term at a Walgreens. So it's a drugstore slash convenience store is what it is, with great real estate.
I walked in there and bought some tools one day.
Everyone's house that's on this call.
What'd you say, Glenn?
I said I walked in there and bought some tools one day.
Literally anything, battery. Yeah. You know, it's just so. We even take that approach when we go into a market and we're analyzing a property. You know, the first thing we do before we put any investors in it, you know, we'll tie it up under contract. If it's, you know, we got a flyer drive, and we do, you know, I said a 5-hour drive, but we'll get on a plane and go if it makes sense. Absolutely. So we get out there, we drive the market, we study the demographics, we look at traffic patterns, we look at growth, you know, what's the daytime population in the area, meaning what type of businesses are there, you know, any Fortune 500 companies close, you know, what's the market? You know, what's the disposable income going to look like based on, you know, the median household income? How are schools? You know, and we take all those factors into it, and the numbers make sense for our investors first. You know, we're kind of under the philosophy if we can't get our investors to a 10% return, hopefully within about the third year on a deal, then, you know, we just kind of sit tight. And that being said, we haven't been very active recently. We're hearing second half of 17, we're going to have some challenging times ahead. And exactly what that means, you know, I'm not certain, but I can kind of feel it. Just, you know, real estate has a fundamental side. There's a data side and an analytics side. There's also a touchy-feely side, for me especially. I'm a kind of a gut guy sometimes. I have to understand the numbers, but I also have to feel it, and it's got to make sense to me. And it's really common sense. I mean, driving it, look at the fundamentals, the visibility, the access, you know, the location, the drive times, all of those things factor in to us making a decision.
Brian, this has just been great. I think about all of what you've shared, and you've sort of demystified this whole era of commercial real estate like never before. You've taken us through from A to Z, and one of the things that I'll retain from this conversation is the fundamentals. You were really clear about the fundamentals. Well, we want to thank you for this time with us. Thank you so, so much. It was great to meet you.
Thank you, man. We appreciate
it's
it.
Been an absolute pleasure. Happy to help anytime, gentlemen. Thank you guys for the opportunity, and I will. I'd love to hear from you guys soon.
You will, and so we're going to keep an eye on that KD too. We're going to keep a close eye on. When I think about KD, I'll think about you.
No rings.
All right.
No rings.
No rings. There you go, my man. No rings. I love this.
Have a great day, gentlemen. Thank you.
Okay. Bye bye.
This has been the Worth Report with your host Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
To learn more about Worth Financial and to speak to one of their advisors, call 704-731-0121. That's 704-731-0121. Or log on to worthadvisors.com. That's worthadvisors.com.